Okay, we have a fun night tonight. Welcome to A Course in Miracles. Tonight we're going to talk about happiness. It's a happy night. We're talking about happiness. It's all good news. A Course in Miracles is always mixed with bad news because of what you're doing. It's just like an intervention, isn't it? A real Course in Miracles meeting, you know, if you take it seriously, it's like an intervention on your life. You know, you egomaniac, you who feel sorry for yourself, you who feel afraid, you who feel weak, you are doing this to yourself. And you know this is true because every time that you take a moment in your meditation to go absolutely still, and you achieve this, you achieve the holy instant in your meditation, every time for me anyway, it comes with a very obvious realization that there's nothing happening outside. And whatever is happening full speed inside. And that if I ever thought that there was something happening outside, especially something harmful or deleterious, this would be a fantasy of me going against what is obviously an ever-growing energy, experience, existence, a being that's sharing itself and sharing itself through me. So happiness, as A Course in Miracles would have you know, this is it's an inheritance. It comes with your being. It only exists, the word only exists, because you've gone the other direction with your exploration and your creativity. You have gone exploring, what would it be like to be in a dark hole so deep that I can't see the way out? What would it be like to be cut off from all of the infinite abundance and fight my way back? Wouldn't that be fun? You said. And then you tried your darndest with all this power to go do it. And you did. There you are. Well done. So A Course in Miracles is like an intervention meeting. We're all coming together. A Course in Miracles is that Jesus and the book are coming to call you out. Surround you with love and with obviousness. And say, hey, you need to make a choice.
What do you want, though? I'm doing that Course of Miracles.
Hey, Lynn, I got this. I got it. You need to make this choice for you, for your sanity, and for everything that you want. You want. What do you want? Let's start with that tonight, okay? What do you want? What do you hope to achieve with your power of mind that you possess now? What's a worthy goal for your reading, your studying, your spiritual work, your meditations, your prayer, your good acts, your good deeds? What would you hope to achieve with these efforts? Let's just take a short minute or two. Ask yourself this question for tonight. What do you want? Remember, if you don't have a direction or a goal, you will have no evidence of achieving it. And you will keep whatever it is you believe now. That's good news and bad news. Remember, if you're not watching the horizon for some sign of progress, you might be going in circles and not progressing at all. I'm asking you to lift your head to the horizon. What do you want for your heart, for your mind? What do you want? And whatever you've come up with, try this out for size for tonight. Whatever you've come up with, could you phrase it with happiness? I want happiness. Give it, receive it, be it. Would that be a suitable? Perfect happiness. Try that on for size. And now, allow something you will call happiness flow right into you, into your very being. Let it come in through your fingertips and travel up your arms and cross over your chest and back down into each leg and bounce back off your toes, back up into your chest and into your mind, in your head, in your hair, and happiness has arrived. What would that be like? It flows right out of your fingertips and out of your eyes and out of your mouth. To anyone and anything around you. Happiness. What would that be like? Bing. 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 Okay. I hope we get to cover these several paragraphs that I've picked out because they're so supportive of our reading tonight. So let's jump in, cover the section, and then we'll see how much we can hear from Jesus. And each other, anybody can interrupt at any time. What you have to say is more important, of course. I'll bend it to the book where needed, but let's hear what lights on your mind, because your Holy Spirit is speaking through you for the rest of us. Go to page 465 for starters, and to paragraph 2. And Jacqueline, you're ready to roll when you get there. Would you read for us paragraph 2 on 465 in the text?
Okay. The section is the inner shift. Mm-hmm. The constancy of joy is a condition quite alien to your understanding. Yet if you could even imagine what it must be, you would desire it, although you understand it not. The constancy of happiness has no exceptions, no change of any kind. It is unshakable, as is the love of God for his creation. Sure in its vision as creator is in what he knows. Happiness looks on everything and sees it is the same. It sees not the ephemeral, for it desires everything be like itself and sees it so. Has part of one thing to see the final question is necessary to the rest, as peace must come to those who choose to heal and not to judge.
And I'd like you to scan back over each of you over that paragraph and look for the word constancy. Notice how it's used multiple times. That's because that's the hard to accept teaching. Is that happiness or joy could be constant. Don't you have to get lucky to keep it for any more than a few hours at most, or to get it even once a week? Doesn't happiness come only to when you're having a really good day and something good has happened? And he says, well, that's because you've investing in this dark hole I talked about. He says, so this is really hard for you. You wouldn't understand, but you want it. The constancy. You've all had joy. You've all had happiness, but you haven't been able to keep it 100% of the time. Wouldn't that be nice? So the word constancy is there because that's the challenge for you. Happiness is not the challenge. Joy is not the challenge. You allow that exists and you want it already. Good. That's 2 out of 3. But you won't keep it. Won't keep it. You won't keep it. You will not keep your happiness. You will not keep your joy. And that's because the fear that you have chosen, like a drug, comes right in and is trusted more. Let's read more. Okay, Emily, would you read the next paragraph? I got your mute.
Okay. Reason will tell you that you cannot ask for happiness. Inconsistency.
Yeah, there's that same word, really. You can't be inconstant if you want to have, careful now, because you got to raise yourself up for this next hour. You have to raise yourself up to the perspective of the author. And that is constant happiness. That is real perfect happiness. From which you were made. For which you were made. For which you were made. And so, you know, there's a teaching there that he would even suggest that you could keep this idea. Please continue.
For if what you desire, you receive, and happiness is constant, then you need ask for it but once to have it always. And if you do not have it always, being what it is, you did not ask for it.
So happiness was just defined from the perspective of the author right there in that sentence. Being what it is, he says, and then just keeps talking. Wait a minute. You mean what it is for you, Jesus? He says, what I mean it is, in truth. You and I have the same mind, so I know it's true for you too. You are dreaming, however, of a dark hole that you can fall into and be separated from happiness and joy. I'm just here to help you wake up. This is the truth, he says. These are sentences that you could take into meditation. For example, the second one she read, she said, "For if what you desire, you receive." Who said that? What I desire is what I receive? It's not true for the ego, is it? It is true for your spirit. It is true for you as a creator. It is true for you who you are in, what you are in reality. Because when the mind of God, the mind of truth, desires, it creates. It is because of what you actually are. So he's pointing out how you manage to make this dark hole at the same way as he's pointing out how to be out of it. Okay, please continue, Emily.
For no one fails to ask for his desire of something he believes holds out some promise of the power of giving it. He may be wrong in what he asks, where, and of what, yet he will ask because desire is a request and asking for, and made by one whom God himself will never fail to answer.
Do you see the circle being painted here? Even if you don't quite get it, you will receive. Or what you are asking for, even if your words are wrong. What if you are asking for happiness, happiness comes. Even if you're all fouled in your answers, in your words. If you are asking for timidness and for fear and for protection, let's say, imagine if you're asking for protection. We're on page 465, Cecilia. If you're asking for protection, you must think you're threatened. Is that fair?
Mm-hmm.
Even though you didn't say, no, I wasn't afraid. I just want to be safe. You're asking because you're afraid, and you're afraid that you are vulnerable. Therefore, what you are is teaching that you are vulnerable, claiming you are vulnerable. But on the other hand, if you start receiving the happiness just by saying, I'm ready for happiness, and I love happiness, no matter what words you use, if it's in your heart, then it comes true immediately, even if all around you is being torn apart. What is in you is shining, and that's where you live. Okay, let's continue.
Yet he will ask because desire is...
Wait. There's a. I either I didn't hear it or maybe you skipped it, but go back one sentence.
Oh, he may be wrong in what he asks, where and of what. Yet he will ask because desire is a request, an asking for, and made by one whom God himself will never fail to answer. God has already given all that he really wants. Yet what he is...
Isn't that good news and bad news? you want more? You've already been given all that you really want. And what you're seeking is something you don't want. And you may seek for that for as long as you like. There will be no limit. But you've been given already what you actually want. That sounds like a twisted message, right? Good news and bad news mixed into one, unless you trust the source. It might take a little miracle, but then you're here for a spiritual awakening, aren't you? And if you trust the source, and a source here is transmitted to you and says, you have already been given everything you really want, it's time to celebrate immediately. Oh my, thank you. Just say thank you. Say thank you right now.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. This is the only response. The book says you have been given already what you really want. Thank you. I will pick it up. You see, there's another part of the book that says, God does not need your gratitude, but you need to give it. You ever thought about that? Why would you need to give gratitude? Why would you need to give gratitude? In this world, when you say thank you say it after something happened. You say after you've acknowledged something good has happened, you have received. He knows this. So please now say, look at that sentence again. Read it. Look at it with your eyes. And it's number 7. God has already given all that he is you really wants. Thank you. Accept it right now. This is important. This should be very lightning in your heart to say thank you. You have all that you really want. And you want, hopefully, some good stuff. Okay, continue, please.
Yet, what he is uncertain of, God cannot give. For he does not desire it while he remains uncertain, and God's giving must be incomplete unless it is received.
How do you love that little circle? And God's giving must be incomplete until it's received. Other parts of the book will explain that you are a co-creator. This hints at that because God's giving. How powerful is God? Well, it's all the power there is, Andrew. Not without you. You are a co-creator in this dance. You receive, and as you receive, you give. God's giving is completed as you receive. Your part in God's plan is critical to the idea of creation at all. It's good news. It's really good news. You're important. You count. Good, good. There's more. Jason, would you hit us with paragraph 4? I'll get your mute while you fire up the vocal cords.
You who complete God's will and are His happiness, whose will is powerful as His.
Okay, now this is a sentence. This is on page 465, paragraph 4, at the very bottom. And I'm going to have Jason read it again, only because if this is not highlighted in your book, please highlight it. This is something for you to look back on and recognize that you just got a job description. In fact, your very being in creation is described in just 8 words. So let's find out what you are. Jason, would you start over, please?
You who complete God's will and are His happiness, whose will is powerful as His, a power that is not lost in your illusions. Think carefully why you have not yet decided how you would answer the final question. Your answer to the others has made it possible to help you. You already partly say, and yet it is the final one that really asks if you are willing to be wholly sane.
He's still talking about that unanswered question. Do you remember? Remember the last unanswered question? Do I want to see what I denied? Because it is the truth. Don't care about what happens to Andrew or my idea of Andrew. I think the truth is possibly better than what I can and Andrew can dream up. So bring it on. Bring on the truth. Let me devote my mind to surfacing and abiding and embodying the truth. Yes. This is your spiritual task, your journey. And Tim, I got your mute. Would you hit us with paragraph? Oops, we both got it. Paragraph 5.
What is the holy instant but God's appeal to you to recognize what He has given you? Here is the great appeal to reason. The awareness of what is always there to see. The happiness that could be always yours. Here is the constant peace you could experience forever. Here is what denial has denied, revealed to you. For here the final question is already answered, and what you asked for, given. Here is the future now. For time is powerless because of your desire for what will never change. For you have asked that nothing stand between the holiness of your relationship and your awareness of its holiness.
Circles, circles, circles. You recognize what already is, and then you recognize what already is, because you recognized it didn't change that it already is. Look at this sentence here. He just read. Number 6, here is the future now. For time is powerless because of your desire for what will never change. Yeah, in your making. Now, what will never change? How could you be so bold to say that there is this idea of happiness could never change? Where does this author get off on saying that? Well, let me remind you of what you just highlighted on the previous page. Turn back to 465, paragraph 4, bottom of the page, one sentence. I'll read it. You who complete God's will. That's quite the job description. That's not all. And are God's happiness. Wait. Did I read that right? You are God's happiness? Whoa. You see, God is not happy. God is not sad. God is not happy. God just is. You are created as God's happiness. Happiness exists because of you. And you exist because of happiness. I hope you can take this very personally. God is not happy without you. It's impossible.
And yet you just described God as not being binary, like happy or sad. God just is.
Yes.
And in the next sentence, we're saying we are God's happiness. Yes. So that sounds like level one, level two.
Yeah.
All in the same sentence almost.
I hope it also sounds like extension.
Well, yeah, we're always extension.
Where you have what is, okay, you have a statement of absolute, and the word God is a statement of absolute nature. Yeah. And from the absolute comes extension.
Yeah.
And the extension is made 100% of its source. It is not the source, is it? Not exactly. Like a wave is not the ocean, is it? But if the wave is the ocean, I mean, it's 100% the ocean, but it's not the ocean, is it? The ocean made the wave did not make the ocean. Well, there's a difference, okay. You see the little circle going on there. The ocean can make the wave cannot make the ocean. The ocean has made the wave. God has made happiness, and you're it. Welcome to your job description and your identity. Completion of God's will and your God's happiness. Other place it talks about you being God's joy, of course. Yeah. Okay, now, real quick, let's go to page 383, one of my favorite sentences on happiness. Text 383, paragraph 4. Just a wonderful, wonderful little.
Hey, Andrew, could I say?
Oh, yes, Andari, please.
Before we go on. Just the point of gratitude, back to the gratitude.
Oh, please, please.
So for me, the gratitude, what that seems to really be doing is acknowledging my own belief that I'm worthy to receive the thing.
Nice.
You know, and because I have to in some way believe that this is for me. And
oh, so not a mistake.
But the gratitude does that, and the gratitude therefore makes the choice for happiness.
Nice.
And I don't know if I should. It's too much fun. There's what happened for me at the beginning. The meditation beginning there. This whole book I wrote is about happiness. So I had a mentor, my third mentor in the book. I was with three mentors for 3 years each. And I would pay this mentor like $100 and sit in meditation, and he'd be somewhere on the planet and he'd give me downloads. And there was something called an aeon, A-E-O-N, from the Gnostic Gospel, which is kind of like the template of how we ground the suffering and ego here in this realm. It's like the anchor into this crazy realm that we're in. And so this was a meditation on how to release this aeon, which I didn't really believe in, but I still paid the guy $100 and did the meditation. And I sat, and that's what came up for me. And what happened in that meditation was this guy, my mentor, appeared to me with this big sword. And he said, do you want to be rid of this aeon? And I said, yes. And he said, well, you know, you'll die if you do that. And I said, do it. And so he took this big sword and he went whoosh. And my body, this shell split open like, and kind of hung sort of at my waist or a little lower. And inside it was just light. It was just this light just sort of everywhere. And then he did a second cut and there was this shell of my body. And all of a sudden I could fly and be in joy. And I was just swooshing around through the universe. And then I didn't know what to do with this body. And I held it up to God and God sniffed it into his nostril. And it was the feeling of joy was freedom for me. The feeling of happiness, that choice.
I hope so. I hope so. You know, there are people who are afraid of happiness and joy and peace. Have you ever felt that? In your spiritual journey, have you ever felt the idea, well, I want to be too peaceful because that would be boring? That's not what Sundari's talking about. Because when you touch the light, it's eternal and infinite. When you touch the holy instant, it is not a closed down experience at all. And when you ever have a meditation where you actually die, your ego identification dies, it is, for me and for everybody I've talked to that I believe has reached it, it's very spacious. It doesn't fit in the body. So, yeah, no reason to be uncomfortable.
The other thing is that the eternal in the Course in Miracles is that which is unchanging. I mean, and so I know that peace, joy, love, light, truth, wisdom, and beauty are the same thing and have the same feeling. And the interesting thing at the beginning of the meditation today was peace came first for me. Mm-hmm. Which is, you know, newer and juicier to put it first rather than light or love. But I know somehow that the closer I get to the truth, joy will be, or happiness will be identical to all of those. Like, so
yeah, you know, there's a Neville Ravikant, is it? He says, peace is happiness at rest. Happiness is peace in motion. It says it all. Peace is happiness at rest. Happiness is peace in motion. You've also investigated, I think, everybody here. We've done it in the meeting a few times. Sources of happiness. And there is happiness for the wrong reasons, right? Schadenfreude or drugs, train wreck, somebody else's train, hopefully. Happiness for the wrong reason. That your political partner failed, you know, political opponent failed. Happiness for the wrong reasons, but you're happy. Happiness because of the drug, yeah, you're happy. Then there's happiness for the right reasons. Things went well. You were helpful. Somebody didn't get hurt. They actually were able to survive a near miss or whatever. You're happy. But isn't the most powerful happiness for no reason? In your life, everybody's been there. Maybe it's when you woke up one day and everything was just feeling right. You didn't have a reason yet to be unhappy or happy. You just felt happy. You know, what's this? Happiness for no reason. This is the happiness that does not change. Please understand. That's why I've made this little point out here. The changeless, just like the eternal, eternity means there is no time. Things that are eternal don't change because they don't change with time. They don't degrade. They don't increase. They don't decrease. They are. But you have to understand, we've gone to a non-linear discussion. Love would be qualified with a capital L as something as changeless. You sure hope love grows, right? You don't understand love that's being discussed if you think it can grow. I hope you have that distinction made, everybody, about the eternal, about the changeless, about the nature of being, or the nature of absolute versus relative. I hope you have that distinction. We'll hit it again. It's another very important discussion that we have in the Manual for Teachers, but it's not tonight's discussion. Ross, what do you got?
Well, yeah, it occurs to me that I am eternal and unchangeable. So I'm not changing my mind, which I believe is even talked about in the course. I'm actually just returning to the actual state of unchangeability that always existed. So it's just, that's waking up. And by the way, I just wanted to add this just because it came up for me for some reason, is that spiritual, I believe this too, spiritual awakening is an accident, but spiritual practice makes you accident prone.
Yes.
Love it.
Oh, man. Yeah, you don't force it to happen. It just happens like an accident. Very good. Okay, page 383, paragraph 4. And in interest of time, I'm going to hold us back to just sentence 1. And Luann, would you read that for us? Just sentence 1 of paragraph 4 on page 383.
Happy dreams come true. Not because they are dreams, but only because they are happy.
After our discussion of permanence and the absolute and the nature of happiness, does that make a little more sense? Happiness, happy dreams come true. Not because they're dreams, right? Dreams don't come true. Dreams are dreams. But because they're happy. What is happening in a happy dream that is eternal? What is happening in a happy dream that is unchanging? What is happening in a happy dream that A Course in Miracles is pointing out that you get to keep, even though it's a dream? And I hope the answer is happiness. The nature of happiness is you being that extension of God. Happiness. Your job description. Okay. Before Sundari answers, I'm going to get everybody turning to page 617, paragraph 1. 617. What do you got, Sundari?
Well, I was just thinking of one other aspect of happiness when you talked about the extension of God, is that innately happiness is a shared condition.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something called the Framington study, which was done, and what they found was a happy person in a household extends happiness for 5 houses from them. In all directions, even if they never speak to those people or interact with them.
Yeah.
They are innately happier because of this happy person. It's shared, and it doesn't happen with misery.
Mm-hmm.
Sadness and grief. But somehow happiness is literally extension itself and sharing. And when you said it's an extension of God, I thought of that study.
Because it's true. More powerful. I love it. Good, good. Look at 617, paragraph 1, and then draw your attention to the end of the paragraph almost, where it says number 9. This is a famous little phrase that I find in A Course in Miracles. That's like, wow, this is a great chance to challenge yourself in difficult times. It says, do you prefer that you be right or happy? That's a serious question. If you He's really making a logical imperative here, okay? You could play with this and make a game out. I'll be happy when I'm right. And I could talk you out of that pretty quickly, too.
I say that to people all the time.
Right.
Would you rather be happy or right?
Hey, come on. Would you, I don't know, what is it you want? Okay, what does you want in the world? You know, do you want the perfect spouse? All right, are you looking for the perfect man, let's say, that's super, super handsome and wealthy and makes you laugh? But if I told you you got that man, you would immediately become unhappy. Versus the average looking gentleman who's, you know, maybe he should do more exercise and he's got a kind of a regular job and doesn't make you laugh every day. But were you to devote to this person, you would be happy every day. It's really easy, right? A car. You want a brand new Tesla? Shiny? Oh, perfect color? Yeah. Free charging? Oh, boy. Versus a clunker that would just run. And I said, and it's just the idea. I just want you to be able to compare the tease of the ego ideal versus the outside ideal versus what you're trying to achieve, which is inside. And you get the perfect looking car, but you would be unhappy immediately and struggling to keep looking like you're happy. Every time I ask you, how's it going with your new car? Don't ask me about this battery problem. Whatever. Your old clunker, there's no news at all. And nobody asks you either. That old Ford just keeps running every day.
I remember when I can you hear me?
Yep. Sounds good.
I remember when I bought my Prius. It was perfect. And I started worrying right away about the first time I was going to put a scratch on it.
Yeah, my brother-in-law bought a new pickup for his little construction company, and they gave him the keys, and he drugged the key down the side of the bed, scraping the paint off before he got in. He said, there, now it's a construction truck I don't have to worry about in the lot.
They probably were gulping.
Like, oh, my God. But, you know, they get dented so fast. He went to peace. He chose peace. He chose. Would you be right about keeping all the dents and scratches off your new truck? Or would you like to be happy and just use the truck and forget about the dents and scratches because they're going to get dented and scratched? It's a work truck. He chose happiness. He said, I want happiness now. He said, my ego is battling with me about trying to make me right about a new truck should be shiny for as long as possible. It was not making him happy. So he got happiness that day.
Yes,
okay.
Something.
Go to page 138 in the text, paragraph 4, page 138, paragraph 4. There's another aspect for you.
While you guys are looking, yesterday I got madder than I have been in ages. I realized at one point I was fuming. I was so mad. Mm. And I thought, is this making me feel good? Or is it going to help anything get better? And what I really wanted was peace. And I knew I had to tell this group of couple women that what they were doing was not working. And so I left it for about 2 or 3 hours, and then I went in and I had a very peaceful conversation with them. And they seemed to agree with me. I don't think they'll do anything about it, but I think they agreed with me. So we walked away happy together.
That's a nice thing to learn. If you take all the fire and energy out of a comment, it doesn't sound like you're insulting correction. It sounds like you're asking for something peacefully.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good call. Number 4. Can we have, we can read this whole paragraph. Deborah, I'll get your mute. Would you start reading number 4?
Okay, the direction of the curriculum. Your past learning must have taught you the wrong things simply because it has not made you happy. On this basis alone, its value should be questioned. If learning aims at change, and that is always its purpose, are you satisfied with the changes your learning has brought you? Dissatisfaction with learning outcomes is a sign of learning failure, since it means that you did not get what you wanted.
Thank you, Jesus. When you are applying yourself to make changes, that's what learning is. You're making changes. And it's not bringing you a happy outcome. This is not what you're after at all. You have to be vigilant against anger, fear, even struggle. The struggle brings darkness. Lots of struggle brings light. If you ever learned a musical instrument, a lot of struggle goes on there. But man, you get a few notes right, and it's worth the whole day of struggle. But happiness. So it's a nice guide. It's a truly, truly nice guide. Turn to page 456. 456 in your text. We're going to jump around for the rest of the meeting. 456. I want you to see these, all these references. They're all the body of teaching throughout your book to help you understand what we read in our reading tonight. 456, paragraph 8. It's just the top of the page. And you're gonna just look at the last several sentences above where it says the function of reason. Do you see what I'm saying? Top of the page. Look at sentence 4. It says, be not held back by fear's insane insistence that sureness lies in doubt. Do you remember we were reading about constancy in our section, our normal section? The word constancy is 4 or 5 times. Yeah. So, Ross, if you found that, would you reread that sentence and continue, finish up that paragraph for us?
Starting with 4. Be not held back by fear's insane insistence that sureness lies in doubt. This has no meaning. What matters it to you how loudly it is proclaimed? The senseless is not made meaningful by repetition and by clamor. The quiet way is open. Follow it happily and question not what must be so.
He's written it down in black and white. There's more Course in Miracles to read, but at this point, Jesus has written in one little sentence, the quiet way is open. Follow it happily and question not what must be so. He's saying if you could see with my perspective, you would know that happiness must be so. Because you are God's happiness. You are God's joy, and God is not happy without you. This is the way it is. It's not what's hoped for. It's not what's going to happen if things go right one day. That's why the word constancy is key for us tonight. You don't believe it, you can't believe it. And yet, the book is saying it is true. You would need a miracle to believe that you are actually happiness. Not that you get happy. No, you are happy. You are happiness. Yes, Ross.
What comes up for me is those last two sentences could almost be part of one of our little toolbooks, which is, and I've changed it. I am still and as God created me. So the quiet way is open. I am still. How God created me, happily. He created me happily. He created me with perfect joy, perfect happiness, perfect peace, eternal, unchangeable. There it is right there. Same thing.
Yep.
Let's go to your toolbox and pull out page 90.
Yes. Look at the authority and confidence that those sentences exist. And that teaching, I'm not a body, I am free, for I am still, and I'm as God created me, says Ross.
If it wasn't for an iambic pentameter,
look how much confidence and authority that is sprinkled throughout the book. So look at it here. He's really calling out the ego. The senseless is not made meaningful by repetition and by clamor. That's your fear. That's your sense of worthlessness. That's your when anger comes up in your life, you know, you're just beating yourself up. Like I talked about to you about swearing. When that comes up in your life and you fly with that, and then you hang on to the little red emotion that you just created and you hang on to it. Where did all that redness come from? Where did that discomfort come from? Who is teaching you that you're vulnerable when you swore? Who is teaching you that things are so bad that you're going to lose something so bad you have to swear? Which is ugly, violent language. So my request for you is each time that you swear, you don't have to stop it. It doesn't mean anything. But don't keep the negative energy. That does mean something. Just drop it. Say, oh, and just let the negative energy go. This is your teaching. This is the power of your mind. This is a gift you can give to yourself. Nice. Okay, go to page in the back of the book, manual page 13, manual for teachers, page 13. It turns out that happiness and joy, you know, they're like cousins. Yeah, a lot going on similar. Luann, when you get there, would you read for us that paragraph on joy on the bottom of page 13?
Joy is the inevitable result of gentleness. Gentleness means that fear is now impossible, and what could come to interfere with joy? The open hands of gentleness are always filled. The gentle have no pain. They cannot suffer. Why would they not be joyous? They are sure they are beloved and must be safe. Joy goes with gentleness as surely as grief attends attack. God's teachers trust in him, and they are sure his teacher goes before them, making sure no harm can come to them. They hold his gifts and follow in his way because God's voice directs them in all things. Joy is their song of thanks, and Christ looks down on them in thanks as well. His need of them is just as great as theirs of him. How joyous it is to share the purpose of salvation.
It is joyous to share the purpose of salvation. Part of that beautiful circle of your awakening and the awakening of all that is. All that thinks it's separate, you have a piece in that. Wonderful, wonderful. And it will be happy. Your nature. Go to text page 471. Text page 471, just after your marker for our normal reading.
Now, back to what Dari was saying, I really believe that when you're sending out love, you're being joyous, and it's part of your mind, which we all share, and other people can feel it on some level, depending on how open they are to it.
So true. Give and only give. You're not alone the effects of your seeing. You're not alone the effects of your thoughts. is contagious on a level that the ego couldn't understand. Good, good, good. Bottom of the page, 471, it's paragraph 3. Just look at sentence 5. You can be sure indeed that any seeming happiness that does not last, it's really fear. Thanks, Cecilia. Keep working on your camera.
So when we're happy about buying a car and then it gets its fender knocked off by my daughter, the first time she used it, which was the day I bought it, you know, that kind of happiness is so short that it's not even really worth searching for.
Bust the ego. Bust the ego on the ego's happiness. Please, everybody, right now, Luann's pointing it out. I will discuss it for a moment. Please recognize that the ego's idea of happiness that we pursue with so much energy, do you recognize that the ego's happiness, the pinnacle of happiness, actually does not come from the item you're seeking in the world now, in the ego. It comes from the certainty of having it and only for the moment of achievement. Ha! I got the new TV. And there it is, plugged in on the credenza. Hold on a minute. I haven't turned it on yet. I hope it works. And what if you got a bum TV? You got to haul the whole thing back to Costco. Oh, I'm not happy yet, am I? Come on, come on, come on. Oh, they didn't come with batteries. Get batteries. But still not happy. You're close because you got the, but it's, what if it doesn't work? You could be really unhappy. Put the batteries in. Turn it on. Screen comes up. It says, welcome. Plays a little sound. Your heart jumps, doesn't it? You'll never be happier about this TV. Because at that moment now, you start coming off the other side. And the world's happiness now, you have to go seek for another thing to fulfill. And the happiness will end when you've accomplished the thing you thought was going to make you happy. Do you see the betrayal? Ross, what do you got?
There's a chart somewhere. I'll see if I can find it. And it's actually got the time period for how long happiness lasts with each of the items. A house is one of the longer ones, a new house. And I forget, I'll see if I can find it.
It's, oh, that would be crazy, man. Yeah.
Like a new marriage is X amount of time, a house, and then it goes down to a new car, and then a new job's in there somewhere.
Oh, my God. It's so, oh, you did it.
Oh, yeah, it's a chart. Emily's waving her hand. Maybe she's seen it. I'll see if I can find it.
Yeah, yeah, find that, Ross. It'd be funny to what a play on the ego to see that, to expose the ego's relative happiness versus opposes to our eternal happiness that we're discussing. Yeah, bust the ego. Yes, Tim.
From the medical point of view, there is an understanding now that dopamine, which is associated with pleasurable emotion, happens initially with, let's say I take an opioid pill, a Vicodin or something like that, and I get a transient euphoria off of it. I repeat that a couple of times, and now I run out, I need to renew the prescription or score some on the street or whatever the story is. And once I believe that I'm going to have more of that Vicodin, that's when the dopamine release occurs again. Not when you go ahead and take the pill so much. It's the anticipation and the belief that it's coming your way now.
Yeah.
So I can, you know, I can be agonizing over my bills, and you tell me I have suddenly scored $100,000 and it's in my account, and I believe it.
Yeah.
Suddenly I get that dopamine release.
And wow, huh?
Associated. So it's the anticipation of the pleasurable item that is actually biochemically lifting you up.
Wow, there
And
it
then
is.
You score the item, the new TV from yes. Costco.
Yes.
And like you said, 1,000, 2,000, it's never higher than when you're first turning it on and you see welcome and the chime.
Yeah.
You know, and it's true for each thing. I anticipate getting that new Tesla, you know, yeah. and so my that's the high.
Bust the ego. Tim is pointing it out. Dr. Day is pointing it out down to the chemicals. Bust the ego.
There
don't
it
fall
is.
For that trap. Don't be pursuing that. Enjoy it. Enjoy it, but don't. But know that this is not the happiness that you are to which you are entitled.
Not only what Tim is saying, but we have three parts of our brain that have to do with feeling good. And it's a circle where you get to the part that where you really feel great, and the next time it says, well, I need to feel greater than I did before. It's always more and more and more. So pretty soon you can't do it at all because it's so high.
Yeah, in order to feel that wonderful bounce, that wonderful juice. But this sentence is very interesting in that it really busts the ego from all that we're discussing right now. It says that this any seeming happiness that does not last, like the TV or Ross is going to show us a list next week with the marriages, houses, cars, a new shirt. Yeah. Until it gets the stain from your favorite burrito shop. Well, I, oh man, that happened to me. Any seeming happiness that does not last is really fear. Isn't it? Isn't that a great sentence? Yes, it was happy. It really, really felt happy. He's not denying that. He's not denying at all how happy the TV makes you. But it's because the fear was released in the moment that everything worked. And now you don't have to return it to Costco, try to get another one. It actually works. You got the fair deal. And that's your juice. Tim's describing to us. That's when your body releases the chemicals that will allow you to enjoy the seeming happiness that will just degrade in the very chemistry that made it. Emily, what you got?
In that note, I was thinking about this saying, it's a Japanese saying, and it has to do with when someone gives you something, then in this culture, the feeling is that I now have to give you something back and reciprocate. And so rather than being obligated to reciprocate, there's a saying that I do not want to accept, but I appreciate the spirit of your intention. And that way there's no need to receive it, but the spirit is received. And in a way, I feel that way sometimes when someone gives me something or, you know, there's just all of a sudden a feeling like, oh, I need to say thank you. But maybe, you know, the thank you is better served when you're swearing like, oh, now thank you. Cause I can see I'm not in my quiet place.
That's a great use for thank you. I love that. Awakening.
Can I comment?
Please.
Okay. I kind of wonder if that when a gift is given and the spirit in the giver is really just giving, I mean, that's what's in the mind is giving. And it isn't part of a reciprocity kind of thing, that the receiver can feel just grateful and no obligation versus when there is that subtle apparent attitude that
guilt is the word maybe you're looking for.
Maybe the person giving feels guilt. I'm not sure wants to engender reciprocity. I just wonder if it's, in other words, I don't know that you make a hard, fast rule.
I see.
But that's what I'm trying to communicate.
Yeah.
Intention.
Yes. Well, yeah, I'd like to remind you that it is an inside job, this Course in Miracles. Your concern is not what the other person was thinking. Kenny?
No. Okay.
Wait, hold on, Kenny. Get ready to start again. Take a big, deep breath. I got your mute. Okay, Kenny, go.
I'm trying to figure it out. That I'm like God? Yeah. I am God. I'm like the Holy Spirit. I'm watching myself.
Yeah.
If I'm doing all that, I already have the happiness.
Yeah.
Somewhere in all of that.
Yes.
I'm going to be with you always.
Yes. Yes.
Because I am going to be with me.
Yes. I, happiness, and the extension of joy will be with you always, because that is your life. It's actually you. Yeah. It is your life. When you're not happy, you're practicing death, and that's a dream. It's not true. So I, life, will be with you always, because you are life.
So I have to be vigilant in that.
Constant.
Vigilant for the darkness, not for the light.
Yeah.
You have the light always. That's it. That's why I want you to watch your swearing, because swearing just pops up and seems so strong. It's just darkness. And the ego's trying to get you to follow it. Thank you, Kenny. It's beautiful. Don, and please.
I just want to go back. I know it's an inside job. And at the same time, what popped in my mind, because that didn't really seem what I was talking about. Well, and I thought about the teaching in the course that says you're not alone in experiencing the effect of your thoughts. So I guess that's the ballpark I was in, was we share oneness in truth, but somehow we can also share in an illusion. We're thinking kind of we're in the same frame of mind, that unholy spirit, the ego. And so I guess I'm trying to say that if you're truly giving in joy, that could disarm another person's own thoughts that are more into reciprocity and uncomfortable with receiving and that kind of thing. Trying to straighten that out, an understanding in my mind.
It's certainly contagious, and yes, I agree with you. The more clear and present you are and undefended you are, the more you will see the other person is not attacking you. Even though they may still be swearing and mixing your name in the middle, but because you're not responding and you're not dancing, they'll calm down too, naturally. But what's key first is that you don't see that they're attacking you. Oh, okay.
A couple of nights ago, in the middle of the night, my son had one might call a psychotic break. And it was pretty wild. He said a lot of, in the world of unsanity, these were like in the realm of unsanity. Mm-hmm. I did have that experience. It kind of came from me knowing that this is not real. You know, what he was saying. And most of it didn't directly have to do with me. But if I said anything that gave him a chance to feel as if I was correcting him, then I became, I would become another one of the people or ideas he would attack.
Yes.
And, but it seemed like he was in flux, because he would bounce back to, but I love you, Dad. I love you, Daddy. I didn't mean you're really evil. Anyway, it was quite, I'm laughing, but it is challenging.
And also it is freeing when you see through it.
Yeah.
And you don't dance to the ego's music.
Yeah.
Very good, Don.
Yeah.
You bet. Very good. Thank you. Okay, we still have a little more time to go through. Okay, turn to page 560, paragraph 9. On page 560 in your text, paragraph 9. I love this sentence. Just the first sentence is all we're going to dig into. Don, would you read that for us when you get there?
I'm there.
Yeah. I mean, this is a great page, okay? But we don't have time to play with this tonight. We'll stick with our knitting here. And just stay with sentence one on paragraph 9. And Don, would you read for us that sentence one?
Yes. Be not content with future happiness.
Stop, 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 stop trying to buy happiness in the future. What a great teaching. Honestly.
And you know what? See, in this, you could imagine being in your home and you have a son, you know, you have a family, you love this human being and want the best for them, and they do this crazy thing. So a minute ago when I was talking to you and I laughed, you know, I there's happiness. And I was laughing about what happened, but I felt happy. But then I kind of held out in this portion this futuring, like, okay, what's going to come next, you know, kind of thing. So this sentence, be not content with future happiness, I just need to embrace the happiness I have now and not think that it's contingent on any other thing occurring.
Hey, in your story, I love the way you described that, and you became present happiness with the craziness, thinking this is not who he is or how he really is or the truth, and you eased up. You didn't panic. You didn't get involved. No. It's like if you have. I knew a guy who did the epileptic seizures. And you know, you just make sure he doesn't go off the edge of something or knock something over that could hurt him. He just has to go through it for a few minutes. It's not who he is, and not how he is. It's not who you're dealing with all the time. So just stay out of the way.
That's and pretty you did much. That. And ultimately, because he wanted me to agree with him, you know, do you agree? Do you agree, Dad? You know, this is the way it is. And I wouldn't agree. But finally, the only thing parameter I put, I said, I would only ask that you not do anything that would be harmful to somebody or to yourself. So that's kind of like, I think, the idea with the epileptic. You don't try to keep them contained. You just try to keep them from falling off the table.
Yeah.
Or hitting their head on a hole or something like that.
What a good father.
I think I was.
Yes. What do you got, Tim? Thank you, Don. What do you got, Tim?
The sentence you just had us read was, be not content with future happiness. In Eastern traditions, it's always stop demanding that the present moment be different than what it is.
Nice. That's a good partner for that sentence.
Right.
That's a very good partner. Thank you, Tim.
Say that again, Tim. Say that again.
What I said is the course here is teaching be not content with future happiness. And then Eastern traditions, but really all spiritualities, it's stop demanding that the present be different than what it is. Right? Don't say, I have to have this, or I can't have that, otherwise I can't be happy. Just be in the present moment. And if you read just two sentences ahead in that same paragraph, it says, for you have cause for freedom now. Right? So that's a reinforcement of that idea. Stop demanding that the present be different than what it is. When you give up that struggle that it be different, a huge sense of peace comes over you because you lay down your armor and your sword and your shield, and you just are, and in that you find heaven. You give up the external and you go in, and there's the kingdom of heaven waiting for you.
Right there.
It's always about giving up, subtracting, never about adding. You don't have to add anything. To have that happiness. Just up the demand that it be different than what it is.
Nice, Tim. Thank you. Yes, Andari.
I was thinking the same thing that Tim was, but with different words. I was thinking that happiness is directly proportional to non-attachment to change. In other words, you know, things change constantly, But if we're not attached to the way things are changing, which is another way of saying accepting how things are.
You mean go with the flow?
Well, you know, the car is hit. The car isn't hit. The gas is leaking. It's just like, there's all these great Sufi stories about, the farmer's son breaks his leg in the field, and you say, oh, that sounds terrible. But then they come to inscript all the young men to go to war, but they can't take the farmer's son because he's just broken his leg in the field. And the story goes on and on. Oh, it looks good. It looks bad. It looks good. It looks bad. It looks good. It looks bad. And in the end, it's just...
Who knows?
How much can you flow with the change without it disrupting your equilibrium?
Anthony DeMello said, "A sign of enlightenment is that you learn to trust the inevitable." Wait a minute. The inevitable is inevitable, isn't it? You're not doing anything except you're going along. You're trusting the inevitable. How much work is that? It's inevitable. I love it. Great little circle, tight little circle. Everybody, turn your book to back of the book, page 106. This is workbook, page 106. Bottom of the page says 106 in mostly the second half of your book. Okay, this is, maybe we should spend a little more time with this one. How much time? Nope, we're not. Okay, so tempting. The workbook is so powerful. The workbook, I think the consciousness of the workbook is actually higher than the text. It's just so much leverage here. It's like, wow! But let's try to stick to our knitting. I want you to see the next quote for sure. So let's have Cecilia. I got your mute if you want.
Okay.
Would you read for us just paragraph 4? Okay. And then read for us paragraph 4, and then read for us the italics on the next page.
Okay.
Okay. So only by fulfilling, right there?
Yeah.
Only by fulfilling the function given you by God, you will be happy. That is because your function is to be happy by using the means by which happiness becomes inevitable.
Oh, there's my word, inevitable. Inevitable means it's going to happen whether you want it to or not. Like, just nothing you can do about it.
It's there.
It's like the truth. The truth is. Please continue.
There is no other way. Therefore, every time you choose whether or not to fulfill your function, you are really choosing whether or not to be happy.
I think we found the problem and we found the solution. Your choice. Okay, read the italics for us.
This is the world it is. This is the world it is my function to save.
That's skipping ahead. Look at the italics on the top of that page.
Oh, okay. Let me not forget my function. Let me not try to substitute mine for God's. And let me forgive and be happy.
Wow, there's how to do it. There's what not to do, and there's what to do, and there's how to do it. Forgiveness, forgiveness, forgiveness. Forgiveness is the tool of A Course in Miracles. You release your wrong thinking with forgiveness. You stop your stinking thinking with forgiveness. You let go of the ego's rationale. Come back into the present moment. Receive the miracle. Enjoy the holy instant. That's what we're learning to do as needed. And now, Cecilia, read that last little bit about this ugly, horrible, difficult, pain-filled world.
This is the world it is my function to save.
Oh, I was looking for something easier. There are no orders of difficulty.
Complicated.
Yes, I know. Mm-hmm. There's no orders of difficulty in miracles. So this is the perfect world. Whatever world you see, is your function to save. You're only held down by your own thoughts.
Hmm.
But you are held down by your own thoughts. You're only held down by your own thoughts as long as you think them. But you will be forever held down by your own thoughts if you think them as a prison. Welcome to your personal enlightenment. This you must do. Nothing, no power in the universe can possibly do this for you.
I think I read somewhere, and if one of us can do it, the whole world will be safe.
Yes, that's right. Of course, one. Yes, one dream, one world, one illusion. It's not as hard as you think. Sundari.
This paragraph made me think of when my daughter was in the hospital for 81 days and doctors saying she was dying every day. Mm. And I knew, and it was like one of the most powerful moments of my life, that period, because I knew if I just bought into that, I'd sink and she would sink. And
you knew it.
And so what I did was reframe it. And I said, oh, what mom gets to be 10 to 16 hours a day with a 23-year-old. And and that's all I held on to, just saw her light, my light, and was kind of joyous about getting to spend so much time with my daughter. And I just held on to that. Oh, and one other thing. I made up a picture. I saw myself at a lecture she was giving in the future on this period of her life. And I think that my holding that picture, true or not, it made me happy.
Live your thoughts.
And I think that it ricocheted to her, showing her I believed in some future. Not that I said that to her.
Sure.
But just I thought it.
And you were living every day for 81 days. You were living the effect of positive thinking, and they were positive. I think that's a great story. Turn to page 110, please, in your workbook. We have just enough time to barely read this. 110 in the workbook. And just go straight to the italics on 110. And Sundari, when you get there, I'll get your mute while you're working your way to page 110.
Sure.
Read for us those italics at the bottom of page 110.
God gives me only happiness. He has given my function to me. Therefore, my function must be happiness.
Where did your happiness come from, Sundari?
God gives me only happiness.
And designed as your function. Think about function, purpose, meaning, forever. This is what you are. This is your intervention tonight, everybody who showed up to this meeting. All these other people, these other 12 people in this meeting are here to stand up and say, your function is God's happiness.
It's kind of like seeing the Ukraine happy and shining.
You see the Ukraine and the Russian thing and the mistakes and their victories and the deaths, all of them must all be seen from the same perspective. From a sane perspective, that what empowers everything is the desire for happiness and happiness itself. Ross, what do you got?
So I found a New York Times study that tracked 1,761 people who got married and stayed married. A big happiness boost that lasts on average for just 2 years.
2 years of marital bliss.
So if your wedding costs $30,000, it's $15,000 a year for your happiness. You can buy happiness for 2 years.
The shine comes off of the sparkly new special relationship. Is that what you're telling me?
Who knew? It's probably the longest one. The rest of them are shorter, you know.
Really?
A new house, a new job, a new car, and then down to your new shirt that you still That didn't last long at all, that shirt, right?
No, like the first day, you know, I took it out to the burrito shop and was enjoying my new shirt and my favorite burrito. And
where went your happiness?
It never, I kept that shirt for so long thinking one day there'll be a new miracle stain remover. Forget it. It's a rag in the garage. Finally the right shirt. No. Thank you, everybody, for studying A Course in Miracles with me. Please take with this the assignment for you to think about happiness in a bigger, bigger, bigger frame. It's your function is from which you were, maybe. It's the function from which you were actually made to fulfill. Happiness. God is not happy. God is not joyful. And yet happiness is, isn't it? Joy is, and is eternal, isn't it? So now it is up to you to take with you tonight the eternal nature of happiness and joy as your inheritance and your function, not the temporary one that the ego might bring and take away. Focus on the eternal nature of happiness and take that with you to sleep tonight. Thank you, everybody, for studying with me, and good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Bye, everybody. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Good night. Week.
See you next week.
I promise.
Be careful tomorrow.
And poof.